Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. I'm Brian McCallan. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Before we get into today's show, I just want to say that you can also listen to this show on the TuneIn Radio mobile app. Just simply download the free app from the iTunes Store, click Browse, type in ACB Radio Mainstream at the top search field, and tap the link below. TuneIn is also available on BlackBerry, Windows, Android, and Amazon Kindle devices. And it's also on the web at TuneIn.com. It's easy, and it allows you to access Speaking Out for the Blind from your favorite mobile device. Now back to today's show. You may remember when I interviewed Bello Miguel Cipriani previously on this show, twice. First, I talked to him about his new book, Blind, A Memoir. Second, I talked to Bello about his role in the development of the Earl newspaper reading app for the iPhone. Today, we've got him back here, talking about his first novella, titled Midday Dreams. We are also going to hear about his new role as a career blogger with the San Francisco Chronicle. Bello returns to talk about these and the other exciting developments in his life. He joins us by phone. Hi, Bello.
Hi, Brian.
So before we get into the latest on your professional life, I was looking at your recent announcement, and I understand that you're openly gay. You feel that the gay community's been slow to accepting people with disabilities. Why do you believe that's so?
You know, just in a nutshell, I feel that there's this notion of being perfect within, you know, the gay world. When you look at gay advertisements, it's always, you know, both men and women are just stunning and flawless, and there's never a trace of disability within LGBT cinema or even literature or just any type of art. Anything that's LGBT associated always has these symbols of perfection and health. And I think that's really affected the community a lot, where most of the time, you know, people try to help me in that community and they do a very poor job. I've received better services from, you know, for example, clubs that are straight versus, you know, gay bars.
Why are you anxious to see people with disabilities on the cover of LGBT newspapers and magazines, and even cast as characters in LGBT movies and shows?
Well, I think that, you know, the LGBT community wants to be diverse. I think that they want to be inclusive, and I think this piece would make them even more inclusive. I don't see any disabled people in LGBT media at all. I mean, even when you look at mainstream culture, we do have, you know, sometimes we make small cameos and we're not always portrayed by people with disabilities. But when I look at LGBT media, magazines, we're completely missing from the picture altogether. I haven't seen any major publication or ad campaign that focuses, well, that has someone with a disability, and I would like for that to change.
Give us an example of that change, for instance.
Well, you know, back in January 2014, Diesel casted a woman, Juliana Mercado, in their ad campaign, and she's in a wheelchair. And, you know, this is a major fashion brand who casted a woman with a disability in an ad campaign, and that was monumental. I would like something like that in the LGBT community. I think that, you know, we have a lot of gay businesses that sell different things, clothing, you know, water, sports, drinks, all these things, and these are all things that people with disabilities consume. Why can't we be a part of the advertisement?
Very simple. Everybody should be included. So, we gotta go on to your professional life, Bello. You've done a lot. You're currently the writer-in-residence at Holy Names University in Oakland, California. What do you do in this role?
It's one of the best jobs I've had. So, you know, I teach, and, you know, I also work with students at the Writing Center. My main goal is to, you know, bring the literary spirit into the university. And I do that by creating workshops, by teaching classes, by working with students one-on-one. The gig came with an apartment for the university. It's given me an apartment. And in addition to that, I have a writer studio where I, you know, focus when I do all my writing. And so it's just a wonderful scenario for me. And I feel very lucky to have been chosen. I didn't apply for the job. It was actually given to me. So,
do you actually teach any courses? I mean, what classes do you teach?
I'm teaching right now an upper division English class for undergraduate students, and I'm also teaching an upper division class for graduate students. So we work on anything from editing to writing poetry, writing fiction, writing essay. Most of these classes are aimed for students who want to strengthen their writing skills, and so I kind of take them to the whole gamut of different forms of writing to help them explore, you know, what style or form fits them best.
They must really look up to you, I'm sure, right?
You know, I've had wonderful students, and I've been very lucky to have students that have always been really engaged. And so that always makes it easier as a teacher to have students that are generally interested in the material. So it's definitely been a very positive experience for me.
How do you help the students improve their writing, and how do you speak out about your past experience as a writer to do just that?
You know, we work on different things. We do a lot of what's called close reading. So, for example, we take an excerpt from, you know, a book, and we read it together, and we talk about things we like, things we don't like. I give them the literary terms, you know, this is what this means, or this is what this is called. When an author does this, this is what it, you know, what the goal is of this literary device or literary trick. And so that's how we do a big bulk of our, you know, assessments together as writers, as we look at other writing and we examine it closely. But, you know, as a blind teacher, I really rely a lot, of course, on JAWS. And so students email me all their manuscripts, and we do a lot of track changes. And so definitely JAWS is my main tool in, working with students.
You're the editor-in-chief of the school's literary journal. What are some of the best articles that you've edited that were written by the students?
So, the literary magazine at the Hoyas University, it opens, it takes submissions from anywhere in the world. So anyone can submit. So if there's anyone out there, any of your listeners who wants to submit an essay or a collection of poems, we just ask it that it be social justice theme. They could submit their work to hnu.edu/between the lines, which is the name of their journal. And so we take submissions from all over the world. We've had pieces come from Australia, South Africa, Asia, and, you know, we've had the great privilege of publishing some wonderful writers. We had someone who writes for the New York Times submit work last cycle, and her essay was wonderful, and it actually had to do with disability, which was very nice and really well put together. But I think one of the highlights of being the editor-in-chief of this journal is just being able to see writing from all over the world and seeing social justice from different perspectives.
You're also a frequent lecturer at other schools, Bello. You went to Yale once. You spoke to the students about how the Latino culture, your Latino culture, shaped your journey to becoming a writer during the school's Hispanic Heritage Month celebration. What was your overall message to the students in that speech?
You know, it was such a wonderful treat to be chosen to be the keynote for that year for Yale. And I really addressed the different aspects of the Latino community that really pushed me to be a writer. I felt that there's a lot of advocacy work that needs to happen in that community. I feel that a lot of, for example, Latino businesses or Latino media in general don't know very, very many things about the blind or the disabled. And so that really pushed me to want to educate my community and to want to give them information that's truthful and concrete.
You also write for the Houston and San Francisco Chronicle newspapers. You write about employment issues. How did you advocate your abilities as a writer to work for the two city papers? Did they give you like a test?
Well, you know, the San Francisco Chronicle, that's where my employer, per se. I'm the main guy there. But the Houston Chronicle then later wanted to syndicate my work. And so that's how that's happened. And now I've had other newspapers syndicate my work. The Seattle Post syndicates my work. So does the Times Union, the Connecticut Post, the San Antonio Express News. So the Houston Chronicle was the first to start syndicating me. Other newspapers followed suit. But how I was able to, I think, get the work is because I did work in career development for 10 years. I was a technical recruiter for a long time. And that was really actually, I think, what gave me the advantage where I'm not just, you know, a writer, but I'm also a writer to talk about these issues.
You were talking technical, Bellow.
Correct.
Mike Cole, the former administrator at the Orientation Center for the Blind in Albany, California, the old school that you went to, asks,
yes.
You worked in technology before losing your vision. Tell us about your transition to working in the technology field as a blind person.
Working in technology as a blind person was actually a lot easier than I expected. I mean, it just kind of lends itself, and I felt that a lot of my colleagues and my supervisors at that time didn't question my ability. They just assumed that there would be some type of technology or some type of system to help me out. And that was very helpful. And so I think that it was a very easy transition to go to doing the same work without vision. And that was a nice surprise.
And he also asks another question, Mike does. How did you decide to become a dog user? That's guide dog user.
You know, I met people who had guide dogs, and I when I would hang out with them, I would notice how people in public would engage them more. Whether we were at a coffee shop, at a restaurant, even just walking on the street, people would go up to them and say, hello, this is my name, what's your dog's name? And I think that was very important for me, just because as someone who's blind with a cane, it's, you know, it's hard to socialize. We can't make eye contact, we can't always reach out to a stranger, and you know, a big part of having a guide dog is having, you know, a way to communicate with the public. And that was something that was very appealing to me.
And dogs are man's best friend. So back to you writing these employment articles for the Chronicles. One of them I saw in the San Francisco Chronicle is titled Do's and Don'ts of Taking Time Off from Work. In a nutshell, what are the do's and don'ts of taking time off from work that you write about in this piece?
Well, I mean, the first one that came to mind is, you know, if you're not sick, try not to use your sick days. You know, it happens sometimes, right? Especially in the city. It's 9 a.m., the sun's out, and you just want to stay home and enjoy the nice weather instead of going to the office. And so, you know, that one of them that I pointed out was, you know, be careful about, you know, using your sick days, because if you use them, then you might be in the pickle if you really are sick. Also, if you use your sick days and you claim to be sick, your employer has the right to ask for a doctor's note. And that could just really escalate to a lot of big problems that are really not necessary. The other do that I pointed out was, you know, let people know that you're taking time off. Don't just run out and expect people to pick up after you. Whether, you know, for example, it's traditionally Fridays are slow and you're taking Friday off. I mean, don't assume that you being out doesn't affect other people. I think generally your colleagues would appreciate if you give them notice and loop them into what's going on with you, because they may have to step into your role for a second.
You write monthly, Seeing in the Dark columns for a number of LGBT publications. What are these publications and what are some of your best articles?
You know, this was such a sweet deal. You know, I was approached by an editor who wanted me to write. He enjoyed reading my book, Blind and Memoir, and he wanted me to write more essays about disability. And, you know, I didn't really have time. I had, you know, these are the gigs happening, and we negotiated on a monthly basis. And so my column, Seeing in the Dark, is published by the Bay Area Reporter in San Francisco, and it's also published by South Florida Gay News out in Florida. And it's just really a column about my musings about disability, you know, different things that happen, or, you know, someone who's, you know, out in the world with a disability.
Your announcement says that earlier this year you became the spokesperson for Guide Dogs for the Blind. They're the Guide Dog School in San Leandro. They also have another campus in Oregon. And you speak at many of Guide Dogs' fundraising events, and you represent the organization in both the English and Spanish media. Which media and upcoming events can we hear you talk about Guide Dogs and represent the school?
you know, I'm featured in their documentary, which just won an award. They received a gold Cindy in cinema.
Yay!
Which is a really wonderful thing.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was amazing. And so I'm featured in the documentary, which is called Harnessing the Power of Partnership, which people could look up on YouTube. I'm also featured in their calendar for 2015, which is now on sale, and people could buy the calendar on the Guide Dog website at guidedogs.com. And I've done many different events, and recently I did, on September 20th, I spoke at the Wine Gala. I've done talks to small chapters of, you know, the puppy raisers, too, as well as talk to trainers. The gamut is really wide as far as, you know, the things that I do for them. And not all the functions that I do are open to the public, but definitely, you know, the most recent thing that people could always look up is the documentary. Again, it's called Harnessing the Power of Partnership. And they could also support the school by buying the calendar, which has me on the cover.
Is the documentary also going to be shown in movie theaters and or on TV?
You know, it's on YouTube right now. We've had different media show excerpts. For instance, there's a Spanish version of the documentary, which I also I am featured in. And that one was shared in a lot of the Spanish media. Univision, which is a large Latino Spanish-speaking network, they showed excerpts of it. And they brought me on their morning show and talked about the school. But for the most part, it's been, you know, through YouTube that people have been able to experience the documentary.
Let's talk about your first novella, Midday Dreams. But let me first ask you, what's a novella?
Novella is anything that's, you know, under 100 pages. That's kind of the unofficial rule. So maybe it's a little longer than a short story, but it's not quite a novel. So something between, you know, 10 pages and 100 pages will be considered a novella. You know, different magazines and even publishing houses have different criteria for what a novella is. But basically, a novella is something between a novel and a short story.
And a novel would be more than 100 pages, right?
Correct.
Okay. Good formula. What else have you been doing in your life professionally, Bello? Anything special?
You know, I'm still training martial arts. I'm doing capoeira, which is an Afro-Brazilian martial art. Yes, I'm still training that, and I'm doing regularly training. And so I'm one belt away from being an instructor. So, you know, working hard towards that goal. I've also, you know, just been really busy lately with the promotion of my ebook, which is, it's been very exciting. You know, this Midday Dreams is the first, it's not the first work of fiction I write. You know, I've been published in many literary magazines. But it's the first one that's a standalone piece that, you know, that's been, that people could access and buy directly. And so I'm excited to have people read something that's by me that has nothing to do about me. You know, as a memoir writer, people would kind of think that everything we write deals with their lives, but this particular piece doesn't. So it's nice to have something that's fiction out there.
So with the capoeira thing, have you guys won any championships?
No, I'm not competing. I could compete. That's an option for me. My career is really busy right now and, you know, my promotions, but maybe in the future I could still, you know, kind of compete. My goal is really right now to do conditioning, and so I'm still doing a lot of acrobatics. I could still do backflips. I could still do aerial stuff, and I could still do a lot of the heavy-duty sparring, and my goal is just to kind of maintain that, and that's something that it took a while to figure out how to do that as a blind person. But I'm really happy with not just the dedication of the instructor, but of the whole school who, you know, has made a wonderful accommodation to make sure I could still participate.
So how can our listeners check out your new novella? And your other book, too, Blind, a Memoir, just as a reminder, the career articles and, you know, freelance for that publication you talked about, and just anything and everything about Bello.
For my column for from the Chronicle, people could check me out at sfgates.com. They could enter my name in the search box and they'll get all my latest articles. I publish every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I have fresh content in my column, which is called Get to Work. As far as my ebook, my new one, my novella, Midday Dreams, that's only an ebook and it could be purchased through any online retailer. So iTunes, they could get it through iTunes. They could get it through Kindle if they have a Kindle account. They could also get it through Kobo. My first book, Blind to Memoir, is they could obtain it through Bookshare. There's audio versions as well as ebook versions. And if they want to keep in contact with what I'm doing, people could check me out on Facebook. My direct email or direct URL to Facebook is facebook.com/BelloCipriani. That takes them to my author page. Or they could follow me on Twitter, and my handle is @Belloism, which is BELOISM.
What if they want you to come and speak at an event? Because it sounds like you're speaking at so many events, Bello. And
I am. And so, you know, people could reach out to me on Facebook. They could reach out to me on Twitter. They could also reach out to me on my website, which is BelloCipriani.com. And in my website, there's a contact form. And that's really how I receive most of my speaking requests, is through my website. People could then, you know, pitch an idea to me. I do about maybe 3 to 5 talks a month all over the country. And it's something that I'm very passionate about, just because I feel that, you know, even though the ADA has been around, you know, for 20-something years, I think there's still a lot of room in making things more accessible. But I feel like right now the timing is perfect, where I feel people want to make their services and products more inclusive.
And
so it's just a great time to be involved in this movement.
Where were you? What were just a couple of your recent speaking engagements while we have a little bit of time here?
Oh, sure. You know, again, recently in September, I did, you know, the guide dog events. I've talked with a couple of different startups. I've been to a couple of different conferences. I've done, in October, next weekend, I'll be in Litquake. So I'm one of the readers at Litquake. It's October 18th in San Francisco, and people can go to the Litquake website for that information. That's litquake.org. And that's going to be a whole lot of fun. I love doing literary festivals. So it's really the gamut of events that, you know, where I could come in and do a presentation for an organization, for a company, or do just a big festival like I'm doing for Litquake.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, you know, I love getting feedback from, you know, blind readers. And, you know, don't be shy. I respond to everybody promptly, and if you send me a note, you'll be sure you'll get a reply.
Awesome, Bello. Hey, it was a pleasure to have you again. And we hope that you just continue your writing ambitions and live a happy and healthy life and really enjoy things, which I can tell you are.
Thank you so much.
But yeah, thanks for joining us today. And before we go, I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode, and even the past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
Do you have a hobby that you would like to discuss, a topic that you are very knowledgeable about and would like to present about to a very large audience? If so, are you interested in becoming a presenter on ACB Radio Mainstream? If the answer to any or all of the previous questions is yes, then we would be delighted to have you join us on ACB Radio Mainstream. On ACB Radio Mainstream, your program must be a talk show, though it can discuss any topic relating to blindness, visual impairment, or the American Council of the Blind. Your program can be pre-recorded or live. To get started, email support@acbradio.org and let us know what type of program you would like to present, what the topic is, how often you will produce a new program, how long your program will be, and if it will be pre-recorded or live. We will work with you to get you on ACB Radio Mainstream as soon as possible. We look forward to having you join us on the ACB Radio Mainstream team.